Welcome to the Wild and Free Podcast, Episode 2. We're continuing our theme this month called Playful. I'm Ainsley Arment, and joining me today is Tina Ingold. In just a little bit, we're going to hear a conversation between Jennifer Pepito and Elsie Iudicello about a concept called Chasing the Spark. So grab a cup of coffee and join us on the front porch. Let's get started.
Friends of ours who go to public school, their playgrounds are now so safe. Like, we just played on concrete. You know what I mean? When we were growing up, but yes, like, even their playgrounds have like that rubber. I don't even know what it is, like tires maybe or something, you know,
like recycled tires.
Yeah, like 6 feet deep, you know, so that if they fall, like they won't get hurt. I don't know. And that's great. Yes, we want to keep our kids safe. But, you know, I just have noticed even the change in safety, all of that is so different now. You know, it's because we want to make sure our kids are really safe and could never get hurt. It's interesting to me, I guess.
It is. It is really true. And the whole, like, safety thing, it's all geared towards man-made things. My kids, they've all gotten hurt on playgrounds or jumping on the bed, or we've had several broken body parts in our house. And it happened falling off playground equipment, jumping on the beds.
Oh, no.
But they've never gotten hurt out in nature, you know, even though they're doing really dangerous things.
Yes.
I think it's because kids respond naturally to natural situations and objects and things. And then when they're put into superficial environments, they lose their bearings a little bit.
It makes so much sense.
Hey, everyone. You're going to hear that interview in just a minute. But first, if you haven't heard about them, every month Wild and Free puts out a content bundle that is packed full of resources for the homeschooling mama. This month, our Playful bundle features so much good stuff. We have an entire section on game schooling by Stephanie Beatty. There's a section called Playful Learning by Zane Catherine Schwager. And we have the most fun book club, Pippi Longstocking by Rainey Harrison. There's a nature journal tutorial called Playing with Nature by Kristen Rogers. There's a special section called The Playful Family by Jody Maccabee. We have multiple podcast interviews and a special tutorial on making paper beads by Rachel Kovac, and so much more. So check out the bundles at bewildandfree.org/bundles.
Okay, changing gears just a little bit, Tina. We talk a lot about play. We want to foster imagination, but we will get pushback from parents, even homeschooling parents, addressing the fact that play is great and all, but what about the real world? What about preparing your kid for college, for example, or test-taking skills and things like that? So let's talk about that for a minute. Do you feel like they can go hand in hand? Do you feel like, yeah, you're right, you know, we shouldn't focus so much on play or whatever?
I feel strongly that they can go hand in hand. I have a curriculum that I use, so I do try to follow it pretty closely, only because I'm not super creative. So I can't just go out in the woods with my kids and be like, hey, let's, you know, learn all about language arts using these rocks. And I'm just not really wired that way. I do think it's important to have a time where you are learning, you know, through books and reading and not necessarily using a curriculum, but that's what I do just because it helps my mind to be organized. But I don't necessarily think that they have to be separate from each other. Like, okay, let's sit down and do this workbook and then you can go and play. You know, you can still make whatever it is that you're doing fun and playful, you know, just even like when we're reading, instead of just reading a chapter, everybody sitting down, listening quietly, and then we shut the book in the end. No, like, let's pretend that you're Edmund and you're Lucy and you're Susan, and let's kind of act this out as I read it. So then you're incorporating play into your reading time. So I think it doesn't have to be so structured, but yet you're still doing the work of it. And, you know, everyone's still together and listening and being involved.
Yeah, for sure. And just goes along with the whole playful learning aspect, making learning fun so that they actually can recall it for a test. You know, exactly. I think that we think, oh, if my kids are going to succeed on standardized testing, we have to actually practice taking a standardized test. But if it's a proven fact that kids remember what they enjoy learning, then I think we're on the right track with the whole playful learning thing.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think learning through music is huge too. We're growing up, we were very musical, and now I'm, you know, my kids really enjoy it. And so making up songs, that has helped immensely when trying to do memorization with poems and Bible verses or whatever it is, you know, making up songs, or we look up lots of YouTube videos. There's actually this guy that takes popular songs and helps you to memorize the times tables through them. And they're hilarious and cheesy and fun, but it helps the kids to remember, you know, through cheesy songs. It
is
helps
that on
you
YouTube?
Remember. It is. And I'm trying to think of his name right now, but oh, the kids and I were just getting a kick out of it. Yeah, definitely learning through music and dancing. We do a lot of dancing or even actions. When we memorize Bible verses, we always do actions with it. You know, that helps too. Just to be playful through those kinds of things. My kids remember what they've learned.
Last August, over 200 wild and free mamas, papas, and kiddos headed to Buena Vista, Colorado for the first ever family camp at Trail West Lodge. We reveled in 3 days of nonstop family fun and memory making, from rodeo games in the corral and late night movies in the lodge, to wacky skits at dinner and thrill rides on the zip line through the beautiful aspen grove in the crisp mountain air. Our goal was togetherness, not just with our own families, but also with those who share our passion and philosophy for raising children.
Like my water filtering, he's like, it's fine, the kids are fine. And we've got like a decent, but I'm like, no, we got to save up for like the $400 reverse osmosis water filter.
Well, we couldn't afford to buy it,
so we just rent ours.
Like most of us came to the camp as strangers, but we came away as friends for life. And the children. The joy never left their faces as their mothers danced under the stars. Fathers competed in wacky relay races, and the kids were treated to surprising moments they'll never forget. Some of us flew to Colorado, but many others drove. These were no ordinary road trips. Not if you call stopping at Mount Zion National Park or Garden of the Gods a commute. We took every opportunity to turn this family experience into a life-changing adventure. You should see the photos. There's something about getting our families out in nature. It drives away the worries, clarifies our priorities, and brings us closer to the ones we love. We could have hosted family camp at any number of places, but no place takes your breath away quite like Colorado, and not just because of the elevation. The mountains made us look upward with reverence and awe. The spectacular views of the valley showed us how small our problems really are in the grand scheme of life. We had to break the ice somehow, so we challenged the families to a series of competitions in the corral while rousing music blared on the loudspeakers. Kids had to carry eggs on spoons while riding wooden horses. Fathers embarrass themselves by spinning themselves into a stupor in the dizzy bat race. And entire families tugged at a rope in an effort to win the title of camp champions. Introverts came out of their shells, reserved individuals found themselves laughing hysterically, and the kids were beaming with delight as they saw a side of their parents they had never seen before. They didn't want to leave. We could see it in their eyes. They wanted things to stay like this forever.
Bring it on in down here to the best.
On Saturday night, we told the campers to wear their best cowboy and cowgirl duds for the Western night. No one knew what was in store, but they were in for a treat. Barbecued meats for dinner and peach cobbler for dessert. And at 7:30 p.m., the music started up for what would be an unforgettable hoedown on the dance floor. We learned how to swing our partner and promenade to the left. And just when we were getting the hang of it, the kids were invited to lead the dance moves. We did the chicken dance, the hokey pokey, the twist and shout, and so much more. The night ended under the stars with hot cocoa, a fire in the pit,
and the slow dancing of Mama and Papa to the soulful sound of country music from the loudspeakers.
We all had different schedules, different work schedules, different class schedules.
Amid all the activities, we got everyone together throughout the weekend for family sessions in the Rayburn Room. The kids piled onto beanbags in the front row while parents sat in the chairs. Ranger Kyle from the Wild Explorers Club regaled us with hilarious stories, and three families led us in singing. You wouldn't believe the talent we had among our campers. There were also surprise skits and games. We started the sessions with a lot of excitement, but ended with a special time for Mom and Dad to hear from my husband Ben and me. We shared the story of Wild and Free and how we've overcome challenges in our own lives and marriage to fight for what matters most in our family. This wasn't just a weekend of community and togetherness. It was a time of restoration and hope for us all. Wild and Free Family Camp was an experiment. We wanted to see if families would desire an experience like this. And while most people didn't know what to expect from the camp, we filled every room at Trail West. Families came to us time and again to request that we do it again next year. After experiencing such a life-changing weekend, we agreed. How could we not do it again? Count us in, Colorado. We're returning the same weekend this year. We only hope your mountains are just as majestic, your valleys are just as beautiful, and your stars are just as bright as ever before. Visit bewildandfree.org/familycamp.
Each kid has a different way of learning, and they have different interests, different gifts, and it's so nice to be able to say, okay, I know exactly how you're able to learn, and to help them, you know, learn something specific according to how each one can learn best. And I really love that. That's one of my favorite things about homeschooling.
So true. Yeah, later in this episode, we're going to listen in on a conversation with Jennifer Pito that she had with Elsie Iudicella. Chasing the spark is the phrase that she used, but it's helping your kids follow their passions and learn through their passions, which is really fun. So we'll do that later. Well, I was really curious, you know, my oldest son, he'll be 13 in May. We homeschool like pretty much all the kids together. They have a different application for everything, a little bit different requirements sometimes. Like I expect a little bit more of my 13-year-old.
Yes.
Just kind of tap into what they're capable of. Not just age, but sometimes their capabilities. Mm-hmm. Some are more bent towards being really wordy and they can just write for pages and pages. And other times a half a page is such an ordeal for them to write.
Right.
And
yes.
I don't think it's just age. Like you can't compare age to age. Sometimes it's just their natural bent.
And their personality, absolutely.
Yeah. But sometimes, you know, my husband and I will stress ourselves out and we're like, oh my gosh, we're doing nothing to prepare our children for college. Why, it'll be 13 in May and what are we doing? Like, has he even ever written a long research paper? Like, you know?
Yes. Oh, yes. We have those moments a lot. I think there are many, many times where the weight of the responsibility of you teaching your children everything they need to know before they go out into the real world is scary. It's really overwhelming. So yes, I completely get that.
I know, it's so true. So I'm gonna just do some research and see like what our college is looking for. Like our homeschool kids at a disadvantage with college. I found a couple articles. One was on CNN and the one title was "Want to get your kids into college? Let them play." And it started out like this. Every day where we work, we see our young students struggling with the transition from home to school. They're all wonderful kids, but some can't share easily or listen in a group. Some have impulse control problems and some have trouble keeping their hands to themselves. Others don't always see that their actions have consequences. A few suffer terribly from separation anxiety. We're not talking about preschool children. These are Harvard undergraduate students whom we teach and advise. They all know how to work, but some of them have never learned how to play. And it's so interesting. It's such a good article, but it talks about these studies and all these excerpts from psychologists and the difference between a play-based curriculum and a skill-based curriculum. And it just basically says that skill-based curriculum is all about drill and kill, you know, because teachers understand that young children can't necessarily learn the meaningful associations between things. So it's like, oh, you just drill them now and then later they'll understand it. Mm-hmm. But it was just talking about the beauty of a play-based curriculum and how young children can observe and learn from others' emotions and experiences, but that in a play-based curriculum, these are the students that are thriving later in college.
Absolutely.
They learn how to take turns, the delayed gratification, they negotiate, and just the readiness skills. It was just so interesting. All the research from standardized college entrance exams and everything, homeschooled students on average score higher all the way up to the 80th percentile above public school children, and that the university officials have recognized just the value that they bring to the laboratory situation. In fact, some universities offer separate entrance requirements for homeschool students because they see that what they bring, it looks a lot different than what they have geared towards public school children. Because they love what homeschool students bring to the classroom and the laboratory experiences, they're more open-ended, they can handle problems so much easier, that they actually created a modified guideline so that they can get more homeschool students into their university because they want to add them in. So interesting. So that's just some encouragement for all you homeschool moms out there. We don't have to just say, okay, we're just going to learn for this time period and then they can play. But that, you know, play is important, yes, but then we can even make learning playful as well.
Do you remember the article that was about the Finnish kids in Finland? Yeah. The joyful illiterate kindergartners of Finland. It's so interesting. I remember one of the quotes from there was, children learn so well through play. They don't even realize that they're learning because they're so interested. I love that. And applying that to our kids' lives too, you know, is just so important.
Today, we're going to listen in on a conversation between Jennifer Pepito and Elsie Iudicello all about chasing the spark. You're going to love it.
Elsie is the homeschool mom who's on Instagram at Farmhouse Schoolhouse, and we've all fallen in love with her beautiful bookscapes. She also blogs at farmhouseschoolhouse.com, and we're super excited to talk to her today about homeschooling boys and using living books with your children. So can you tell us a little bit about your family and how you got started homeschooling?
Well, we have four boys. Our eldest is 8 years old. We have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. I never really wanted to homeschool. I grew up thinking that homeschoolers were a little strange, and I didn't really actually meet any homeschoolers until I became friends with a few in college, and then all of a sudden realized what a great education the majority of them had. And whenever we had to work on projects, their worldview, their approach to things was just so interesting to me. I was trained to be a teacher and worked in the school system. And once my own children came along, I just had this really strong desire to stay at home with them and to learn alongside them because I wanted the best parts of their days and I wanted to learn with them.
So you homeschool four boys, and I have boys and girls, and I've found that it's a little bit harder to get my boys to sit still to do school and to read aloud and all that kind of thing. How do you get your four boys learning so voraciously?
I think part of it was just coming to the point where I had to accept that they were going to never learn the way that I did. And I had to celebrate the way that they were learning and find a way to come alongside their energy rather than trying to constantly be pulling them back to fit in whatever agenda I had come up with for the day. So people hear that we read a lot of books, and sometimes they think that means that I'm sitting on the couch with the book opened up and they're all gathered around me and we're all learning that way. But a lot of times, you know, two of them are hiding under the piano, building forts with Lincoln Logs, and another one will be building Legos at the table, and I'll have another one sitting upside down on the couch next to me with his feet up on the wall. So, you know, there's just always a different picture than what I had intended, even going into a regular day where I think, okay, you know, today we're going to look at this book, this book, this book. We're going to do this and that and the other. And then the boys walk in and everything changes. And I have found that if I go along and try to have some kind of a compromise with whatever energy they're really feeling that day, our learning comes together and our creativities mesh. And we learn so much more together that way because there's no push or pull in any one direction.
Well, how do you show narration? Like, are your kids writing down what they read or are they telling you back what they read? How are you kind of recording what they learned from all these books?
Right. So we do a couple of different things. When we talk about narration in our home, I'm not looking to quiz them to see what they've forgotten. I'm looking to see what they remember from the story, what they've connected with, for several reasons. One, just to kind of gauge what it is that they're learning about the topic that we're on, but also to see where their passions and interests lie, which help me later on when I'm trying to find new books for a new topic. I have one son that is extremely interested in how different people in different cultures live off the land. What resources are they using? How do they share and trade with one another? Everyday lives, you know, if there is someone that has lived on the same piece of land for 40 years harvesting coffee, what does their everyday life look like? That's something that he really connects with. So I'm looking for things that they are connecting with. So when they narrate, you know, I look for the things that they remember so I can gauge those things a little better. We do a lot of notebooking where once in a while there'll just be an idea or a thought, something that they've grabbed from the story that they really connect with, and we'll write that out. And in notebooking that, you know, it's copy work, it's penmanship, it's grammar, it's art, it's so many different things. And then we save that in a special book. I've always really loved all the things that Jody Maccabee has said about notebooking. She really helped me refine that for the boys. And then we also have a lot of storytelling at night where they also relate back to me things or ideas that they caught hold of during the day. So that's kind of how I gauge what they're picking up and what they're doing with the stories.
I thought of Jody Maccabee as you were talking because her idea of having the kids tell you back and then writing it down and letting them copy it is so approachable for our beginning readers and writers.
Right.
And so you have 8, 7, 5, and 3. Now, how many of those are reading and writing?
Well, I have my 8-year-old and 7-year-old are reading, but they're actually on different levels right now. My 8-year-old has definite strong visual disorganization and possible dyslexia. So I have a very different approach with him than I do with my 7-year-old, who is a voracious reader and reads anything he can get his hands on. He's been fascinated with Odysseus and Tales of the Odyssey for the last, 6 months, and on his spare time loves drawing pictures from it, making his own book work, copying whole passages from it. He's really intensely engaged with that right now.
My 7-year-old boy is not reading well yet either. So It's interesting. He's the 7th child, so I know that all of them will and can learn to read.
Right.
But I know it's a little bit nerve-wracking there. There's a little period there where you're like, okay, let's get reading for fun and Get beyond that reading as a chore stage.
I mean, I struggled with my own, I'll say feelings of failure with my 8-year-old just because I'm someone that loves reading. So of course, when I had children, one of my first thoughts was, I can't wait to read them this book. I can't wait to build relationships over these stories and bond over these things. And when I realized that he was really, really struggling, I just had this moan of, I failed him. Did I push him too soon, too hard? And so I've really scaled back. And our big goal right now is for him to gain a little more fluency as the year goes on, but to really just develop good relationship with books. That's my main goal with him right now. And the truth is, he loves hearing stories read aloud. He just adores it. So
The main reason to get your kids reading early is just that they get all that extra vocabulary. But If they're in a home where they're hearing it, then they're really not missing any learning.
Right.
And just as we keep plugging away at drilling sight words and working on their phonograms, because I had a daughter who had really poor auditory processing. So phonics was just painful for her. So when we started with her doing some sight words, that really helped her break into more reading fluency. And so for my 7-year-old, I'm doing a lot of flashcard words because he'll read them when they're single like that, but he gets really nervous and bogged down when it's a whole book full of words on a page.
Right.
You talked also in a blog post about chasing the spark. Can you explain that concept?
Right. So chasing the spark, I've noticed with my boys, every once in a while, we'll be reading a story and they will hear a new word or they will catch on to an idea. And I see it in their eyes, like something will just spark back there where all of a sudden their imagination has been fired. There is some kind of relationship working through there. The gears are turning and they are ready to chase down that idea and find out all that they can about it. We see it when they're 4 years old. They love to ask why. And then right around the time that they're five, it's wanting the same things over and over and over and over again as they're establishing relationships. So I think when they get to that next phase where they're able to have a little more autonomy in what they get to explore and what they get to discover, allowing them to have the ability to have that spark, that question, that idea, and giving them the freedom to chase it down and learn how to investigate it, research it, and do experiments with it is really valuable and really important. I think very empowering to them, because we want to eventually be able to take our hands off and let them ride the two-wheel bike by themselves, you know?
Yes, I love this, especially in contrast to how public schools do it. You know, public schools really do not want to take the hands off the bike in some sense. Every bit of education is prescribed and controlled. Whereas, you know, as homeschoolers, we do have the freedom to allow our children's interest to lead in some way or some form. So could you describe an incident, a book or something where a spark was lit?
I think one of the most recent examples, which I think is probably in the blog that you read, was when we were reading Swiss Family Robinson. I think it's within the first chapter even. I think we were only like two pages in, and the author talks about Archimedes' lever. And immediately my eldest son was like, Archimedes' lever? What is that? Who is that? What does that mean? And in some ways, I was like, oh man, we just got comfortable. People are actually all sitting this time. I want to keep going. But he was so interested and so curious. So I said, well, let's go find out. So I walked over to my bookshelf and I just happened to have Archimedes and the Door to Science by Jeannie Bendick. And we opened that and we read a little more about it. And he was just tickled by this idea. So we ended up going outside and it was really hot that day. But the kids got out all of this scrap wood and brought it over to their fort and started experimenting with physics, started to apply different kinds of pressures and weight to see what they could lift using what kind of weight on what scale and what end. And they did all kinds of stuff. Kids got scratched, kids got cuts. I ended up bringing out band-aids and lemonade. They came in, they designed some tree houses. We read a couple of more books. There were some definitions for some words that they weren't, you know, a little too sure of. So we went and got the dictionary and they got to spend a little more time figuring out how to work through the dictionary. We looked up some pictures. They had to go get more materials from our garage. They were looking through the recycling bin, trying to find the perfect materials to make the things that they were trying to get together. And we ended up spending like 6 hours on this one question of Archimedes' lever. And they learned so much that day, way more than they would have learned from a worksheet or from some agenda that I had that morning of like, we're going to do this, this, and this, because it was hands-on and it was theirs and they owned it and they asked their own questions and they sought their own answers. And that morning always reminds me of the Charlotte Mason quote of, you know, whatever children dig for becomes their own possession. And I really saw that brought to life that day.
What a beautiful example. And it's so interesting because many of us would make our kids do all the worksheets and all the reading and kind of get through the whole agenda before we'd let them follow an interest like that. And by the time we're done, they'd probably be too tired to follow it anyhow. But by letting them pursue that, they experienced all kinds of physics learning and vocabulary and art and design and dictionary skills, just a myriad of skills that were used that day because you let them follow that spark. And like you say, that is an experience they'll never forget. How would you encourage families who want to delve into more interest-led learning to get started or to kind of break away from feeling tied to doing exactly what a curriculum says every day?
I know when I first started, part of the reason that I chose a really exacting curriculum, and that's not to say that those kinds of curriculums are bad or wrong. I just knew that I needed a structure because that's all I knew. And I was terribly, terribly afraid of failing my children. And I was terribly afraid that I somehow would not get everything in. And I think at some point I just realized, you know, there is just no earthly way I can teach them all of the things. But I would like to influence their lives well and help shape who they will one day become. And so I want to focus on teaching them to learn well. And so part of that was this whole idea of letting them do their interest-led learning as much as possible. And again, you know, this starts when they're little, just letting them outside, letting them get dirty, letting them investigate things, letting them be about the business of naming things in their own backyard for hours and hours without people coming in and interfering and bossing them around and telling them what to do. So I think a good approach to this is just, you know, in the first step of accepting that your kids really need that freedom and finding out more about their learning style and the things that they're curious about and being okay with the fact that, you know, this beautiful year that you planned, that you had in mind, all these books, all these things that you wanted to do, that your kids may not be interested in it. They may take a different direction, and that's okay. And that could be a good thing too. You have a chance to redeem whatever it is that you're feeling insecure about with your own education, and you have a chance to have your child learn alongside you. And that's a really powerful thing.
How do you manage the rest of your life though? Like, a lot of us are also a little bit overwhelmed with, you know, how do we do projects with our kids while we're trying to make dinner or get the laundry done or, you know, teach them math?
Sure. I struggle there too. I am notoriously horrible with getting the laundry done in a timely manner. But again, I think it's just this acceptance of, I'm going to do what I can do for my house to function well, but I'm not going to be able to have it all perfect all at once. Like, I always tell my husband, not every room in this house is going to be clean at the same time. And when it comes to finding times for projects, I think that's an intentional thing. I had a Bible study leader a couple of years ago when I said to her, I don't know how I'm going to get all this work done on top of everything else that I'm going to do. She said, Elsie, in this life, we all do what we want to do. If you really wanted to do it, you would get it done because it matters to you. And so I think if we put a priority on giving our kids that chance to have those opportunities for learning, clearing out space and time, not scheduling every hour of the day to death, just leaving some time for leisure, some open time for wondering, for pondering things that they've learned in the morning, then a lot of times that interest-led learning has time to come to fruition. If kids have stuff scheduled for them every minute of the day, then there's very little time for them to wonder and ponder things and think of new ideas that they want to chase down.
I love that. And I love seeing it happen in my own house. Even my two youngest have been making a nature museum on the back porch. And it hasn't really taken a lot of effort from my part. They read the Moffett Museum, and that was kind of a spark for my 9-year-old. And then I had to help them haul a couple shelves over there and allow them to take the bed of fish on the back porch or whatever it was. But most of the work for it, they've done themselves once that spark was started and once there's just a little bit of accommodation as far as time goes.
A nature museum. I love that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how it all turns out. So do you schedule chores and things like that, or is it kind of as they come up?
We do something, and it's not my own original idea. I probably read it somewhere, but I call it the blessing hour. And it happens usually right at about 4 o'clock. And that's the time of day when I start making dinner. And so I told the children, this is the blessing hour. Bless our family by tidying up around the house. Pick up your toys, wipe down tables, throw away crumbs, you know, wipe down the counters, clean the bathrooms, do whatever we have to do so that I can make dinner. Daddy comes home, we can all eat together. And then we have time together as a family afterwards to read or play a game or play some music, play on the piano, play guitar, go outside, go for a walk, do whatever we want to do and spend time together as a family. So that's kind of how we've handled things. In the morning, they do get up and, you know, make their beds, brush their teeth, put away any clothes that they need to put away. But usually chore time is restricted to blessing hour. I haven't really called them chores yet. I've just told them that they're blessing our family. So that's what we do.
That would actually work for me. I'm notoriously bad at following through on chore incentive charts. It's like I put the chart on the wall and I put stickers on it for like 2 days and then it all falls apart. So I like that idea. Sounds simple.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Elsie. We loved having you. Before we go, just a reminder, our new Playful Bundle is out. It's packed full of resources, downloads, tutorials, book clubs, nature journaling, and so much more. Go check it out at bewildandfree.org/bundles. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone, and we'll see you next time on the Wild and Free podcast.